Okay, good evening, and welcome to our discussion group here tonight. My name is Rick Thompson, and I'll be your moderator. I'd like to introduce our guest here. To my left is Steve Goldstein, who's an associate of Steve Kamen, who's to his left, and Steve is the co-founder of Mosaic Wealth Strategies Group Limited. And good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening. Good evening.
And how
thanks
are you?
Thanks for having us.
Oh, that's hey. Thanks for being here. I want to get into some of the questions right off, and I want to ask both of you. What are some of the financial issues that keep you up at night?
Well, I find the answer to that question when I ask most people is, am I going to run out of money? How do I know if I could survive to age 100 without having to go on welfare or look for a home to live in? And that's really what keeps most people up is, how am I going to survive when age limits are getting longer and longer, life expectancies, people are spending more and more, and the problem is they're not saving as much as they should be saving.
Okay.
And that's what the basis of usually most discussions.
Yeah.
And you know, and the thing that I find, too, is, let's face it, really, you know, you have a working life. You grow up, you get a job, and what you're tasked with is really to make money, right, and you pay your bills, and then you put enough money away each time, if mm-hmm. you can. And then all of a sudden, retirement kind of creeps up on you. And then something funny happens around 45 or 50 or 55, because you start to see the end. And you're up at night, and you're thinking about this stuff. Do I have enough money? When can I retire? Can I keep the same lifestyle that I have now throughout the rest of my life?
So right. I think that's probably one of the biggest things that people worry about, is how much am I going to need if I live to be 80? Or 82. I mean, am I going to have enough as when I'm 75 years old? Because I think the average age is probably 80 years old, if I read the stats right the last time. So there is planning for, even after you retire, for years. And I think, you know, you have the information and the knowledge to help people out for that. What about when the market fluctuates? When I invest with you, and when I was young, believe me, I never thought about this, as a lot of young people don't, I think, planning for their future. But should someone that invests with you be worried when the market fluctuates, or do you have it pretty much evened out?
Well, I don't think you can really say it's evened out. And really, before you even discuss investing, mm-hmm. you really need a plan. You need a roadmap. Where do you want to be? Where are you now? Do I even have any money to invest? So it's really not investing is the question. It's planning. What do I do to plan? And what do I do to change the way I'm doing? Because you're changing people's habits sometimes, and that's hard to do. But if they don't make some type of change, nothing happens. So you really need to look, where am I today? And how do I get to go where I want to go? And then you worry about what instruments. It's not about instruments. Mm-hmm. It's more about lifestyle, desires, feelings, goals, and then take it from there.
Now, as a younger person that invests early on, a lot of younger people have the problem of saving money and then using it all when they either have a first child or they want to go somewhere. And I think it's hard for a person to save themselves. I think they need a planner like you two that can give them the extra boost. You can't do that.
I love the smile on your face, the look. Are you trying to tell us something?
No. I wish you were around when I was young, because I think younger people, as we said before, don't think about their future. And I think you need someone in your field that can keep them on track, really. I mean, you don't think about this. You tend to not keep your commitments to savings. And I don't know. I'm just looking at it when I was young and my thought process. And
I think one of the best exercises you can do, and when you're young, I mean, it really doesn't take top priority. It's not. But you really should look at what you're spending, because that's really the whole the big deal. That's the cornerstone of all planning, is how much you're spending each month. And by no means are we saying, like, look, you shouldn't splurge when you have a kid or a baby, right? You shouldn't splurge when you get married, all right? But as long as you're paying attention to it a little bit, instead of living paycheck to paycheck, okay? And you have an idea that, hey, look, you know what? I'm going to try to put this away this month, or I'm going to try to put this away next month. Great things happen when things start to compound. In other words, when you start putting it away and you give it time to grow, it doesn't even have to be a lot each month. But if you have some attention to it and you do it, then all of a sudden it grows into something nice, and then it helps you when you actually stop working, mm-hmm. because you're going to have to draw that down at some point.
So you get to be retirement age, or you're creeping up on retirement age, and I say to you, when should I begin to take my Social Security? Cap year is 65, but I can take it at 62, or I can take it at 70 if I want, and I'll get more. So what do you say to that?
Well, it's actually a process. There's no one answer to it, because you got to realize at full retirement age, you get your full benefit. If you take it at 62, you get 25% reduction. And if you wait to 70, you're making 8% a year. But you have taxes to look at. You have your other savings to look at. How much money do you have? You also have to remember, people under the misconception when it comes to Social Security, when they have cost of living increases, they're cumulative. They're not cumulative. It's only on the base. So your benefit doesn't grow as fast as you think it's going to grow. Also, Social Security, for most people, unfortunately, is a major leg of their stool to stand on, because they haven't saved. If there's any way you can make that number bigger, because it's at least theoretically it's guaranteed for life, then you really should look to prolong that. But then you got to also look, life expectancy. If your family has a very short life expectancy, maybe you don't wait. If you have a lot of money and the taxes are going to be high, maybe, again, you put it off. It's all a part of a formula. There's no one answer to that.
Okay. So the plan's developed, tailored to the individual, for what's better for them.
Sure. And you have to tailor everything. And even before we get to Social Security, I'd say for the younger people that we discussed, you're going to work, if there's a 401k plan, put something in it, because it's coming out before you get your hands on it. The only thing I would say, if you have the ability to put money in a Roth provision of a 401k, put the money in a Roth provision. You're not going to get a tax deduction, but then again, the tax rates are very low right now historically. Yeah. But the money's going to grow tax-free for the rest of your life, as opposed to taking the deduction today, letting it grow taxable, and taking it out maybe at a much higher tax rate later on.
Sure. And I like to go back to Steve's point that if you start young, you don't have to put an awful lot of money away each month. I think the more years you can put in, I mean, that little amount adds up, compounds adds up.
It really does, and I've been through many financial analyses, and I have to tell you, if you work with numbers all the time, I mean, you would be floored to see just a small amount over 40 years, okay? If you're going to be working, if you have a work life of 40 years or so, say you work from 25 to 65, that's a long time, and those little amounts, you're right, if they keep growing, they just blossom into something really, really nice to draw from when you finally call it quits.
But just remember one thing about compounding. Compounding is good if you do it correctly. Compounding a mistake is terrible. Mm-hmm. If you let that mistake just keep compounding over the years, it's very hard to undo it. Most people don't have the time span.
Well, that's why you're here. I mean, you're here not only to help people make money, but to give them the best vehicle to make the money in. And like you said, if it was up to me and I had to make a decision myself, there are probably a lot better ways that I could have done that. So, again, that's why you're here. And, you can help people out immensely because of that. So take advantage. And that's what the two Steves are here for.
And well, that's not just that, too. It's also you have to look at your whole picture. I mean, if you're young and you got married and you have a child, before we even talk about that, let's discuss, do you have a will? Do you have guardians for the children? Do you have any provisions at all? I mean, there is always a will. It might be the state's will, not your will, the federal government's will. governments will. Mm-hmm. But someone's going to make something happen at death, whether it's the first or second death. So people always say, I don't need a will. Yes, you do need a will. Well, they'll say to me, you know, I did a will. It's 20 years old. And I'll go and I'll talk to them about it. And we'll look and say, oh, I see you have guardians for your children. Well, they're grandparents already. But they have the money going to the guardians. Some of the guardians are even dead.
Yes.
Or, oh, there's your ex-spouse. Maybe you might want to change that one. You got to look at your beneficiary forms. You got to look at your paperwork. And we find people in the ages from 35 to about 50, they tend not to really review anything. They figure they did it once. But the problem is they did it once, yes. But the circumstances have changed, and they have not kept up with the changes.
Sure. Well, that's what I was just going to ask you. I'm 35 years old, and I start investing with you. During my lifetime, probably things changed, and they don't stay the same, correct?
Yeah, I think the one thing you get out of this conversation is that there is so many moving parts. I mean, if you think about it, it's kind of scary, right? Basically, we'll go back to the working, right? So you're going to work for hopefully 30 or 40 years. What if you can't? Right? What if you have health problems and you can't? So that's not locked in that you'll work to age 65 and retire, right? Then you put your money into an account, right? And it's managed or you invest. There's no guarantee on that either, right? Then there's Social Security, right? And your benefit's not guaranteed because it's due on a work history. It's actually calculated on work history. That's not guaranteed. So, yeah, things can change. But that's why you have to have a plan. And then it's almost like taking an airline flight and then going on a 5,000-mile trip. As long as you're generally pointed in the right direction when you first start, you're going to get there. And then you make these constant tweaks. And when you finally come in, right toward the end, you land the jet on a runway. And that's how it works. But you have to have good habits, at least when you start. And then you start tweaking things every time things change so you actually hit your goal.
Mm-hmm. All right. We've gotten Social Security and what we're going to do with that. What about when you need income in retirement? What assets, if you've been putting them in vehicles, what assets would you take the funds from?
Well, it's interesting because there are so many different ways to take the funds, for example. You could take the funds based upon why you want to take it, and you say, I'm going to take from this account, that account, or whatever. And then Steve could say, well, maybe I should take it from this account or whatever, and that account, and I'll look at it and say, how about we do it another way? And I would come up with a solution. Now, the difference is I can make the funds last maybe up to 7 years longer without putting any money in, because I'm taking them out in the most tax advantage way, as opposed to just picking, well, that looks good, I'll take this today, or that's easy to get to, so I'll take that today. So when you think about it, if you could add 7 years of income, or up to 7 years I've seen, of income to your retirement just by taking things out in the most tax advantage way, there's a whole planning section right there.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the tweaks that you...
Yeah, if I could dovetail off of what Steve said too, that tax advantage way is very, very valuable, okay? But when you're moving towards retirement, when you are investing, there's certain things to invest in so you can grab them from certain accounts in an advantaged way. Okay, that's the thing. So it's not only taking them from certain accounts, it's actually creating those accounts to take them from when you're building. See, there's a lot that goes to it. Yeah, it goes into it, really.
Oh, yeah. And as you were saying, there's many spokes in the wheel. And I'm sure over time, different vehicles come up. Different plans come up, different ways to invest in other ways too. So that is an ongoing process that you have to stay up on, I'm sure, to make decisions.
Plus we have the government. They're always changing the game in the middle.
Oh, yeah.
It could be the third inning and they totally change the game. Now you think you're playing a completely different game. You planned for A and A was good. Now they change it to B.
Right.
And now you have to do everything completely different. They grandfather in usually A, but now how do I make B work for me?
Right.
And they've done that with 401k plans. They've changed them so many times that if you look at the original 401k plan, it doesn't look like anything that we have today. Because they keep changing the game in the middle and trying to figure out ways to get more money from a tax point of view to help
sure.
the government, because there's a $22 trillion deficit there.
Yep.
And they can't keep running up the deficit.
Well, they can't.
So much money you can print. And there's so much money you can pay up, but there's bills that have to be met. There's only so much they take in.
Gee, I just heard back in April and May that money's so cheap they can print as much as they want. The interest rate's so low. I mean, you know, they just turn the switch on the machines and it just, you know, comes out. But no, you're right. It's it gets to a point where it gets so high that you start worrying about it. I'm sure that's probably one of the things that keep you up at night. You know, when, how big is that deficit going to go?
Yeah, and Rick, let me just add that to, or let me just add this really. If you think about it, right, there are a lot of numbers that are kind of scary. You know, you can see these trillions of dollars of debt, and it's kind of hard, the concept of a trillion. It does have 12 zeros after the number, right? So it doesn't really mean a lot to most of us, right? It's a lot of money. So I think you have a responsibility to yourself, not only to do what we're talking about here today, but you also have to look at taxes. Like, I think Steve was alluding to this, right? Tax rates are low now, okay? And so what do you do? What kind of investment do you pick, right? There are investments out there that you can actually pay the taxes now and be okay for the future, or there's an investment where you don't have to pay the taxes now, but be obligated in the future. And so you have to make those decisions, okay? So if you're getting a little nervous about the way the country looks economically and what's happening, then maybe what you do is you actually pay your taxes now so you can own it all yourself. And so we can show you how to do things like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's a philosophy, and I don't know if it's true or not, that investors... a lot of times wait until they get older because the tax rate is less when you hit a certain age. Now, I don't know if that's true or not.
It's very interesting you said that, because all my clients usually come in and say something like, oh, I'm going to retire. I need like 80% of what I had when I was working. And that's usually when I say, well, which 20% of the golf course are you not planning? Which 20% of the vacation aren't you going on? And most of them wind up spending so much more because they're sitting around going away on vacations because they really didn't go away. It's funny, I have clients now that buy better cars today that they retired than when they were working, because all of a sudden they're traveling and now they want the nice soft ride as opposed to the economy car. So they really wind up spending more over a period of time when they're retired than actually if they're working.
And yep, that's
an interesting dynamic. Most people don't think that way.
Well, they don't. It's that's why it's another spoke in the wheel. And you know, you just have to ask the right person. All right, we have different vehicles now that the wheels go on to. And can you tell us what the best program is, either an ordinary IRA, a Roth IRA, and what is an RMD?
Well, basically, let's look at the regular IRA.
Okay.
Okay, so, and we'll make it real simple here. The regular IRA is you actually make money, okay? And you can take a portion of that money and say, hey, look, I don't want to pay taxes on it now. I'll pay taxes on it later. That's a regular IRA. So you take the money that you don't pay the taxes on, put it into an account. That's an IRA, individual retirement account.
Okay.
Okay? The Roth, right, you actually make the money, you pay the tax on it now, okay, and you put it into an account. Now, that money, if you follow the rules, there's some five-year rules and things like that, you could have tax-free growth for the rest of your life. So in a Roth, you don't have any tax liability if you follow the rules. In that IRA where they gave me a tax break when I actually made the money, I owe them taxes later.
Okay.
And we don't know what those taxes are a lot of times 20, 30, 40 years down the road. That's the risk you're taking.
Okay.
Okay? Now this RMD, the way it falls into place here is this. When you're age 72 now, okay, you know that money that you put away that they gave you the tax break on? That's great, right? But they start to make you take it when you reach age 72.
Okay.
You have to take it out whether you need it or not. And then you guess what happened, right? You pay tax on every dollar
that you're taking out.
That you're taking out at the rate that they say you pay it on. Hmm. And that's the risk.
The other side of the coin is people forget, or they just don't realize it. What was the tax rates in the 70s? They were in the 70% bracket.
Oh, yeah.
Right. I remember my first house, mortgage was 18% and change.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting 22% in the bank because inflation was just so high, and the tax rates were just as high. And I tell a story of how I got into this business. I got into this business because of all that. I was third generation in my grandfather's business, And one of the original partners died in 1974. I joined in 71. The estate tax was so high that we had to liquidate the business to pay the taxes. Oh. And that's how I wound up in this business. And I've been doing it now, you know, for over 43 years, because it's such a travesty what the government does to people.
Oh, sure.
And there's an interesting article once, an interview. A person went up to Reagan, when he was an actor, and said, how can we only make two movies a year? And he said, it's really, really simple. First movie, you pay me $100,000. The second movie, you pay me $99,500. And he says, why? He says, because the minute I hit $200,000, I only make 6 cents in every dollar. So it doesn't pay for me to go to work. Because when you figure I also live in California, I owe them 13%. So I lose money. So I never make more than $200,000. Because you got to remember, there was times when the tax rate, and people forget, the brackets were as high as 90% during the war.
Oh, yeah.
We're so used to such low artificial rates that if you say to somebody that, you know, normal rate was 50, 60, 70% back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, they look at you like, you know, you have three eyes.
Oh, yeah. It's you know, I worked in a bank back when I got out of college, and it was in 70, from 70 to 73. And I remember the bank recalling mortgages because the interest rate was low, and they wanted to boost them up to the current rates because, like you said, with inflation and that, the rates were going up so high. And in every mortgage, there's a clause that says a bank can recall the loan. And, you know, and everybody had to, today you had a great rate, and you woke up the next morning and your rate was 3-4% higher. But today you don't think about that. And, you know, I mean, in some ways, people think they have it really tough today, but everything's relative, I guess, to some point. But yeah, back then it was quite a world to live in as far as financial world.
And let me say this too, and you guys really, if you're looking at financial planning, you should make sure you don't make this mistake. Right, take your 401k, and let's say there's $500,000 on the statement, the 401k, older client, okay. I want you to ask yourself how much you have in your account. And please don't say $500,000, because a lot of people forget that in that 401k, you owe taxes on that money. So that $500,000 isn't yours. And then I want you to ask yourselves the next question. How much of it is? Now today, if you pay the taxes on it, you'll know. But 15 years from now, you're not going to know where your partner, the government, how much of a share did they actually have. Mm-hmm. Now, that might keep you awake at night.
Sure.
That might keep you awake.
Exactly. Well, what may help you sleep at night, it's in a Roth.
Yes.
And the reason I say that is, well, if the taxes go up 20, 30%, that's fine. If the taxes go up 20, 30% on a Roth, 20, 30% of zero is what? Zero.
Yeah.
There's no tax due.
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's right. So you
to think about.
That's right. That is something to think about. And again,
it's not just the Roth. There are other vehicles too. I don't want anybody to think it's only one vehicle. There's so many different ways to handle the situation.
Right.
But again, it's based upon somebody's thoughts, their desires, what their goals are. You know, am I philanthropic? Do I want to give some away? I don't want to give any away. Do I want to help other people? Well, I don't want to help other people. So there's so much to it. There's no mm-hmm. one shoe fits all.
Well, again, that's why you're in this industry and you're not selling cars, because if I came to you for investing, I'm not going to buy a car from you. So you're the experts in this, and people should listen to you, and you give them the different options, lay out the plans, and tell them which one is best for them according to their needs. Right. So let's hope interest rates don't get that high again, or, you know, on the borrowing side. On the savings side, they can go up. But
it's hard to do one without the other.
Exactly, exactly. Long-term costs, how do they affect me?
Long-term costs in what sense?
Long-term care.
Long-term care insurance. All right, it affects you in the sense that if you don't have any coverage and you go into a nursing home, pretty much everything you have will wind up at the nursing home. On the other hand, if you have some type of coverage, some of it will be paid for by the coverage. The biggest problem most people have, the biggest fear, is they're going to wind up in a nursing home. Now, mm-hmm. in New York State, the average up here is $12,000 a month. It's a lot. But you go downstate, it's already $13,000 and change. That's a month. Mm-hmm. Well, do 12 times 12, it's $144,000. If you have only $500,000 or $600,000, it's not lasting very long.
No. And probably the average person doesn't have that much, to tell you. I mean, in all honesty, those that didn't do it. Now, is the long-term care insurance program, is that a relatively new program? I mean, as far as some of the other savings plans that go back 30, 40 years.
Started around the mid-'80s.
In the mid-'80s.
But the problem with long-term care, most people don't want to buy it, is it's expensive. Yeah. And the rate's not guaranteed. And if you don't go into a nursing home and you paid it for 20 years, 30 years, you lose everything you pay. Mm-hmm. So most people don't want to buy long-term care. So there are hybrids today. There are insurance policies, excuse me, life insurance policies that actually have long-term care riders.
Okay.
So if you live and you never use the nursing home portion, you at least get the money as a death benefit when you die.
Sure.
Or if you go into the nursing home, then you have the death benefit going for long-term care insurance, and if there's any excess left over, then it goes as a death benefit to your beneficiaries.
Okay.
So there are a lot of vehicles that are coming around now that we didn't even have 10 years ago because of that.
Now, is the premium for the long-term care, as you said, a lot of people don't want to get it because, you know, I mean, it's an expense that you don't, another one that you don't think about right. that you're going to use. Does that go up with your age? The older you get and that you want to buy long-term care, is it more
actually
expensive?
You find, yeah, if you're taking it out for the first time.
Right,
but
correct.
It does, but here's the problem. Premiums are not guaranteed. So as morbidity increases and the claims are getting larger and people are staying in the home longer because of medications, the prices are going up. Mm-hmm. People get letters all the time, well, the price is now going to be X, so you can either pay the X, keep your coverage, or reduce your coverage and keep the premium you had.
Yeah.
And it's not fair, but it's understandable. At one point, we had over 20 long-term care companies. Today, I think there's only about 4 or 5 left.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's a business, and you can't expect a business to operate every year not making any money. I mean, nobody wants to pay more money when premiums or anything changes. So, right. But here again, it's another spoke in the wheel of planning for your future because, like you said, you can be wiped out if you go in a nursing home. I've known 50-year-olds that maybe had a stroke or a serious illness that had to go into a nursing home, and they may be in there for 25 years, 30 years. Yeah. And
hey, let me elaborate on that a little bit, though. So, and not to scare you, because we're not here to scare you, but I got to tell you, you might go through your whole life saving what you're supposed to save, okay, and investing in what, you know, is suitable for you, and working till you're 65, and doing everything correct. And say you have $1 million or so in your retirement fund. And through no fault of your own, okay, at age 80, you forget your name, and you can't eat by yourself, and you need help, right? They're called ADLs, Activities of Daily Living. And if you can't do a certain amount of those, right, you go on claim for long-term care help, and if you have an insurance policy in place, money can be sent to you, and you can start paying for that. Now, there's a lot of things, right? Steve, correct me if I'm wrong. You could use the money to stay at home if you want. You can go
home
to a facility.
Care, right.
You know, a lot of people want to keep their, you know, they want to stay at home and live there. But it is not fun, okay? And there's a lot to take into consideration there because a lot of times, you know, your kids are the ones that will take care of you most of the time. But what do you do? Right, here's a consideration, right? What do you do if your kids move away?
Right.
And they don't live near you and they have their own lives. Now, some loyal kids will probably come back, and a lot of times that happens. But this is the stuff that has to be prepared for because chances are the percentages are high that you're going to need some type of care like that.
Sure, we live to be an older age.
And you can't depend on your spouse because they're getting older also.
Exactly. Yeah.
But there are also things you can do with legal documents and trusts, but you have to do them soon enough. Because in New York, we have a 5-year look back. So if you do something and you go into a home within 5 years, it technically gets unwound in the sense that now your deductible is the amount of time that you've spent down through whatever the document you did. So you could maybe find out you're not going to get anything for 4 or 5 years because you gave it all away, and they assumed you would have had it.
Right.
So it's very hard to hide it with computers today because everyone tells me, oh, they'll never know, we'll hide it, don't worry. Well, we got this now. Now with computers and the way things go today, they all talk to each other electronically.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to plan for these things, too, and do it correctly.
Sure, and a lot of times a family member will make a decision for you based on the degree of problems that you have. You know, I don't think anybody wants to go into a nursing home.
No.
They all want to stay home. I mean, not only for the mental part of it, but for the comfort part. You're more comfortable at home, but it costs money.
But think about it, though. You can't feed yourself. You can't bathe yourself. You need oxygen or medication. You're 82, and your wife is 79. Is she going to be able to pick you up, put you in a tub, and bathe you?
Yeah.
Be able to feed you with oxygen or medications. So, unfortunately, sometimes you have to go into some type of facility.
Oh, sure.
And we plan for that. That's killed more dreams than anything else,
mm-hmm.
is health.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a major part of planning today. If you don't plan for it, it's negligent. And unfortunately, we have this going on now in our office. One of the people in our office, the father really has to be in a home, and the mother's fighting. She wants him home with her.
Mm-hmm.
She can't take care of him, and she's just so distraught that she doesn't want to reason. She just knows after 50 years of marriage, the husband has to be with her.
Yep.
And it's not the best thing for either one of them.
No, it isn't. It's very hard if you have a spouse, and it's harder when your spouse passes away. We had that situation in my family. We were the only kids that lived here. So, you know, when my mother-in-law passed away, my father-in-law stayed in the apartment. And he was getting to the point where it was hard, but I would go over every day and, you know, I'd give him the bath and shave him and take care of him. And I'd go over, make sure he took his pills. I mean, it was only a 10-minute drive, so it was not a problem. But the worse you get, the harder it is to handle, and that decision had to be made.
And the older you get, the harder it is for you to do.
Exactly. And since I'm only 39, you know, I still have a lot more years to go. But, no, it really is. That's probably got to be one of the harder parts of savings, is to try and get someone to plan for long-term care.
And let me make this comment, too, because a lot of people think that they have a lot of money, and they think that they'll self-insure. Okay, so I want you to think about this for a second. You can actually go and you can buy the insurance, or you could plan with some of the programs that Steve has. I know we can actually help you plan so you have a better retirement. And what does that mean? That means more retirement funds in case you need the care. Or you buy the insurance, right? So the more money you have, right, if nothing happens, that's more reason to buy the insurance to protect that, okay? Because that money can leave very, very quickly, monthly. Right, so seriously consider that, because again, you don't have any control of this. This isn't your fault. This is just what happens, and it could happen to you. Okay, not to sound scary or anything, but I've seen it happen. I went through it with my parents, and you have to be prepared for this.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well, definitely. You said this in the beginning. There are so many things that you have to think about and prepare for, and you have to be well rounded, because you can't leave an area open, because you'll have problems. And so that's good. I mean, it's a good information to have. Next topic I'd like you to talk about is my beneficiaries, and how do I go about getting my affairs in order so that, you know, the beneficiaries are taken care of. As we all know, sometimes there can be problems with beneficiaries. But, you know, let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, the first thing you have to do is think about, who do you want to leave something to? Who are the beneficiaries? Once you know who they are, then we start looking at the documents to see, are they the real people? Or did you have other names there that should be gone? Mm-hmm. So you really have to do your homework first and think who the beneficiaries are. And then once you do that, then we sit down and look at all the documents. What could it be? Wills, trusts, life insurance. I mean, there's a lot of areas 401k plans, IRAs. You have to look where you have a beneficiary. Mm-hmm. You need to keep record of all this and then act accordingly.
Now, we talked about wills earlier on, and I'm with you, and I have my, you're my financial planner, and I've got everything, and I had a will, and I set up the beneficiaries. How often should I revisit that will, or would you suggest to me, let's revisit your will to go over who your beneficiaries are and what ways you
want
to go?
Once things are set up the way you want them, mm-hmm. I wouldn't suggest how often you go over your will. We have a rule in the office. We meet with every client every year. If they don't want to meet with us to keep everything current to make sure nothing changes, then we really don't want you as a client.
Okay.
Because just to do something once is going to hurt you more than if you do it once and mm-hmm. then make corrections along the way. And we're not looking to hurt anybody. So it's a give and take. We're willing to do it, but you got to be willing to commit to it and give us all the information and sit down with us. And if you don't, we'd rather not get involved because of the fact you can't do it once, do it correctly, and expect it to last for 20 years.
Yep. And basically, that's the thread that's been weaving through all these topics that we've been talking about, is to constantly look at what you have. Because things can change every year, and you want to make sure you're on top of things every year. Otherwise, I mean, it's a shoot in the dark because things change and you may not know about it. So here again, meeting every year with you is beneficial for everything.
We suggest a minimum of a year, but if something happens during the course of the year, mm-hmm. we want to sit down with you. If there's a birth, a death, an adoption, or whatever the situation is, you know, we want to know so we can keep things current and plan currently. Mm-hmm. So it's the minimum of a year, but if something happens, we'd like to see you.
Sure. Or at that time. Come into a windfall. Don't sit on it.
We do that.
Come in and, you know, and get things tweaked.
Yeah. And one thing I want to mention, too, though, where we were talking about wills and stuff, it's a process, okay? So, again, you want to dot your I's and cross your T's. Here's what you have to do. I mean, you really have to decide on an executor, an executrix. Who's going to actually take care of that? I mean, that could be a big deal depending upon how much you have. Okay, so a lot of times it's sons and daughters, right? But talk to them, okay? The durable powers of attorney and the healthcare powers of attorney. If you become incapacitated and you can't make a decision, who's going to take care of that, right? And you might be 50 and you might think nothing's going to happen to you, but something could happen to you tomorrow. So just have those documents in place, okay? I just went through probate for my parents, and you know when the will was dated? 1993. 27 years ago, they did it. But they did it.
Yeah.
And it's a big process. So talk seriously to, you guys know how to pick who's the executor or executrix. Sure. A lot of times it's the most responsible child, and then make that decision.
Right.
Have that conversation.
But what I will say about that is also ask them if they want to be.
Right.
I mean, I get a lot of paperwork, and we'll look at it and, well, how'd you pick the guardian? Well, he's the oldest. Does he want to be the guardian? I don't know. I never asked him. We've had people that say, no, I don't want to be guardian.
Sure.
I don't want to be the executor. I don't want to handle the money. And a lot of times we'll sit down with people, and we may suggest something like, all right, let's get a professional person to handle the money, but you handle the family. Mm-hmm. So you can't tell them where to invest the money, and they can't tell you when to distribute the money.
Right.
And together, a professional and a personal is usually a very good way to do it.
Sure.
If you don't have anybody in the family who knows how to handle it or wants the responsibility.
Well, a lot of times you hear, too, well, the closest one that lives to me, I'm going to let them handle things. And you may have other siblings that are a lot more knowledgeable than the one mm-hmm. that's the closest. But, you know, they're more comfortable with just being able to get to the house in a half an hour right. or whatever. Yeah. So... All right. Now, we did talk about a lot of this. Do you have any further information on if my situation changes?
Well, before we go into that, let's just say there's one other thing you really should look at when you hit 65.
Okay.
Called Medicare.
Call Medicare.
There are so many different plans out there today between Medicare's and supplements that you really take somebody that knows. We have one person in the office, and that's all they do is Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't even want to know it. I don't want to touch it. I don't even want to learn how to spell it. If I know you need it, I just say one name, go see Maureen, She handles all the Medicare.
Yeah, I know that's a beast in itself. I know.
And that's all she does. She doesn't get involved in anything. So in the office, we have people. We have money managers that just handle money. We have, like, Maureen, who's my partner, and she just handles Medicare. I do the planning. Because you just can't, it's not you, one person do all anymore. It's
right.
Not like the 50s. You know, laws have changed. You look at the tax code now, there's over 90,000 pages in it. Nobody knows what's in all of it. You can't. No. But I will say one thing about the 90,000 pages in the tax code. If you're willing to really work with it, there's some great nuggets. And the only difference between Branson and Buffett and Gates and the three of us is they use the whole tax code. We just look at a few chapters that are easy to do. We don't talk to people that know the whole ins and outs.
Yep.
When you're willing to sit down with somebody that can sit down and know the ins and outs, you'll see a big difference in your life. Most people are afraid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't embrace it. It helps you. There are good stuff in it, and there's bad stuff in it. It's like any other document.
Sure.
But there's a lot in there that you can do and use. And if you do need any help, you can look us up online. You can call us. We're available. Make an appointment, come in. We're not going to charge for any type of initial consultation. We don't know if we can help you. If we can't help you, we're not going to charge you for it.
Sure. Now, you just said a magic word, look you up on the web. What is your web address if somebody wanted to look you up?
www.mosaicwsg.com.
So okay.
MosaicWSG.com. And if they want to call us, it's 518-587-6282. And they can call us.
And if you'd like to stop into the office, you're on 120 West Avenue in Saratoga Springs, New York.
And Suite 301.
Suite 301. Mm-hmm. So that's, that's another, I'm glad you stopped.
Stop in and see Christy and she'll set up an appointment.
Yep.
Cool.
And it's easy to do. So situation changes, we've talked about that in pretty much every other topic that we had, but here again, stop in, call, or get on the web and make your connection and stop in and talk to them, because like Steve just said, you got professionals for every aspect of the retirement savings, how to plan your money for the future. And it's so much that, as you said, one person can't do it all. The one-stop shop's not there anymore. So anything else that you'd like to bring up that we haven't touched on?
One thing that has to do with planning, we'd love to work with your accountants and attorneys. If we work with you, accountant and attorney, it's to your best advantage. Mm-hmm. A lot of people say, well, do I really need to? And we always suggest, let's have a conversation or two with them. We don't fear them. We like working with them. It's the only way it's going to do what's best for you. Again, it's a pizza pie. And if you don't put all the slices together correctly, you don't get a round pie. So if you leave a slice out, you're not doing it correctly.
That's right. So. Okay. All right. Steve?
I'll end with this. Everybody that's probably listening to this podcast or recording probably works very, very hard. Okay, and you really owe it to yourself, right, to keep track of what's going on financially in your life, right? If you don't do it, right, and the clock keeps ticking, just like we're talking about, as time gets short, right, it's going to be harder to get to where you need to be. So do yourself a favor. You deserve it, right? Take the time and start thinking about planning. And again, just like we said, right, the earlier we do it, right, the easier it's going to be. But even if you're 55 or 60 or whatever, come on in and then let's take a look at where you are. And you know what? I'm not going to guarantee anything on this call, but you probably will sleep better at night.
Mm-hmm. I would think. And that brings us back to our first question, you know, what keeps you up at night? So with that, I want to thank you two Steves, Steve Goldstein and Steve Kamen. And let's do another chapter as we get on later in the year.
Sure. Thanks for having us.
Oh, anytime, anytime. All right, everybody, you have a great night, and just remember the contacts that we've talked about here, and you're on your way to a good financial planning. So have a great night.